So can you tell me a bit more about the farm that you lived on? What sort of stock did you have?
When we first went there, we really bought it because we wanted to rear greyhounds, wanted to have greyhound kennels, and it was just the right size, and the fields on a hill where they got plenty of exercise and built the muscles and everything. And we also had cattle and sheep. When we first went, we just had some milk cows, and we used to sell the milk to the people in the forestry village down below. And we had no electricity, so we had to milk the cows by hand.
Mm-hmm.
We had to get up in the morning and then cool the milk on an old-fashioned cooler. And we used to bottle it, and my husband used to take it down on a barrow to the village and get lots of cups of tea and things. And it was really a very nice life, a very nice life. And then as time went on, we got sheep. We did away with the cattle because we got too old to look after them, and we got sheep. But it was a lovely life, really.
So did you have hens and...
We did for a while, but hens and greyhounds don't go very well together, especially if you're getting greyhounds that haven't grown up with them.
Well, they chase the hens.
Yes, well, I mean, they're sight hounds, aren't they? That's their business. And it's all right if you rear them from puppies. I mean, a lot of the coursing greyhounds that grow up in twos and threes on farms, they lived happily with the hens. But if you're getting them from goodness knows where, because quite a lot of people used to get them, you know, and think they were beautiful when they were litten, and they thought they would rear them themselves, and then they realised that they became problems and they needed more exercise is what they thought. And so they would get into a bit of a fix, and they would send them to us to put right and bring round. And of course they had never seen hens. I mean, we had... one day we had a calamity with the sheep because my husband went away. I let some dogs out, and my husband went away down and to fodder the sheep, and I didn't know he'd opened the gate. The dogs go, oh dear. We had a bit of a job that day. You know, it's just things have to be used with what they're living amongst. Yeah.
So did you was your father racing the greyhounds?
There were greyhounds, some were for coursing and some were for the track.
Mm-hmm.
And my father in his younger days used to train greyhounds. After he married, he got a job as a private trainer with Captain Webster at Unthank Hall, at Altwhistle.
Mm-hmm.
And he was there for quite a lot of years before he came to live in Bewcastle, and then he bred them and put them onto the farms and kept them for people. And the farms used to sort of diversify. The farmer's wife would rear two or three greyhounds, and it was a bit of pocket money for her.
So where was the nearest track?
The nearest track, well, the nearest licensed track was Newcastle.
Hmm.
But the owners organised that. They sent them to a trainer who trained for the track, and they lived in the track kennels. I used to feel very sorry for them when they went away, because they had such a wonderful life with us running free in the fields, and then they had to go into kennels and chase an artificial hare.
Mm.
But the coursing dogs, of course, had much more freedom because they had to have the strength to course.
It's a long route they have to go, isn't it, the coursing?
Oh, well, I mean, they're chasing a hare, and the hare's unpredictable. You know, you don't know how long that was the part of the fun of coursing, because you didn't know how long a course your dog was going to get.
Yes.
It was the look, wasn't it? You know, sometimes the course so long that well, they'd used up all their energy, so they had to be withdrawn because there wasn't a fair match the next time.
Yes.
If the dog that they met in the next round had had a light course, well, of course, it was going to beat him.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's sport, isn't it? Mm-hmm. That's what it's all about. It's the uncertainty.
Yes.
Yes.
Did they ever do that drag racing? Because I've seen them at Bucastle where they...
Oh, that's the hounds, though. That's the
hounds, not the greyhounds.
Trail hounds. The trail hounds originally were hounds from the pack, from the Bucastle hounds. And they used to let them off from Christenbury, which is the highest point in the district, to where what they called in those days, in the late 1800s and early 1900s, was a picnic. It was like a sport being held somewhere. And they used to go up to the top of Christenbury and let the hounds off from the back in the summer when it was a closed season. And they would go to the point where they were having the picnic, and of course the handlers would be waving them home and have a tidbit for them. And the men who took them out then used to race home, and that was how the fell racing began.
Oh.
Yeah, they used to race home, and a lot of tales are told about that, because there was one particular pair were great rivals, and they were coming down off Christenbury, which is peat hags, you know?
It's
peat, deep peat. And one pushed the other into a peat hag. so of course, handicapped him for a bit, because it took him a bit to get out. And that sort of thing, you know, a lot of fun in it and sportsmanship.
Yeah.
And they used to also have the forerunner of clay pigeon shooting at these things. And when they had, like, glass pigeons, have you seen them? They're like a ball, a glass ball with feathers in.
No, I've not seen them.
No, well, I've seen one. Somebody once showed me one. And it was a glass ball with feathers in. And when you hit it properly, when it was hit, you see, it shattered and the feathers. It was like, you know, it followed on from the pigeons. Because when my father was a boy, it was live pigeons. And the boys used to rear some pigeons to be let out. And then, it's a horrible thought now, but that's how they did it. You know, and if they were a good shot, they shot them, and if they didn't, well, the pigeons survived. You know?
Yes.
But that was how it progressed. And then it progressed to a glass pigeon with the feathers in. And then, of course, now it's a mechanical thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Just
it shoots out of a box or something.
Yes. Going back to your farm, when did you first get electricity?
It booked 1965.
Oh, that late?
That late. And before we got the electric, we had an engine.
Oh, you had a generator?
We had a generator to run the milking machine, because my husband had grown up on a dairy farm where they had milking machines, and he didn't think very much of having to milk the cows by hand.
Yeah.
So as soon as we could, we got a little engine. It was just a small affair, but with the aid of a booster, we could have a vacuum cleaner and a television. So we got a television. They weren't very advanced in those days, but we got a television, and he could judge how much fuel to put in the generator, so that it just ran till about 10 o'clock or something, when we wanted to finish the television. And sometimes maybe we would be in the middle of a film, and you would see the picture on the screen getting smaller. And so he would run outside and put a little can, maybe a bean can or something, with TVO in the tank, and then if you were in the house, you saw picture widen again, and it would do till the thing finished.
Now, we had neighbours in the 60s, and we used to live at Howgill near Walton, and they used to put a tanner in the back.
Oh.
So you put a coin in the back and sort of turn a knob.
All right.
Yeah, it would. So every so often it ran out, it would just, you'd lose your screen.
Aye, that was just the same.
Yeah.
And the neighbours used to come up and watch ours, because nobody else had one, you see, much.
Yes.
Because they hadn't electric down the street at the forestry houses, and used to come up and watch ours. And I remember at the time when we had ours, I wasn't never been a boxing fan, but I thought Cassius Clay was magnificent, because he was superb, wasn't he?
Yes,
he was. I don't know whether you can remember him, but
oh, yes.
He was superb. And this man, oh, he was racist. And he used to say such dreadful things, and I used to say, for goodness sake, don't tell him that Cassius Clay's on the television, because I can't stand that. And you know, but, oh, I mean, he was marvellous. It was wonderful. You know, and we were young enough to like cowboy films then.
Yes.
As well. When I think back now, what we watched.
Yes.
But, you know, that was those days, wasn't it?
Oh, yes. Well, it's a long time ago.
It's a long time ago.
Yes. So, when did you first get a tractor?
Oh, soon after we went, I think, my husband bought a little Fergie tractor of Joe Telford at the home, eh? And it was grand, you know. He thought it was great.
Because we're... Around us, it was early or mid-50s before people began to get tractors. Would that be the same?
Yes, yes, because that's when the horses went.
Yeah.
You know, it was sad, really, because there was something very nice about going into a hayfield and a couple of horses standing,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
There was something very personal about leading in hay behind a horse, you know. It's a different atmosphere altogether.
Well, they're lovely animals.
Oh, they're lovely animals. And I mean, the Clydesdales were lovely temperament.
Yes.
They were lovely.
And when would you have first got running water? I mean, you would have had a well in the outside, would you?
There is a well in the yard at Field Head. It's got a flag over it now. But it was a pump, but never in our time the water was in. But the water, when my parents came to live here, because my father bought this little cottage for my grandmother to retire into when he was short whistle. And my aunt was having to carry the water about half a mile down the road.
As far as that?
As far as that, yes. I have somewhere or other, I will find it if I live long enough to see it, everything sorted up. There is a picture of her with a yoke over her shoulders and two buckets.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah.
And my father was horrified at my aunt having to carry this water, because he had lived, he went away to Essex as a boy to learn the greyhound trade when he was about 14 or something, and he'd never known life for a very long time without running water, and he was quite horrified. So he started a campaign to get the water into Roadhead, and I think it would be with one of your relatives, Wilfred Roberts.
Yes, Wilfred Roberts. He was Winifred Nicholson's brother, and he was.
Oh, was he?
Yes. So he's my great uncle.
All right.
And I think he was MP for North Cumberland. He was Liberal MP from sort of about 1935 to 1950, something like that.
Yeah, my father was a great fan of his, and he used to write to him regularly. Because during the war, you know, you said about Mabel Wright making mats for your...
Mary Burick.
No. There was a Mabel Wright. I don't think we ever confirmed that, but I think one of the people you're talking about would be Mabel Wright.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Mabel's husband was a shoemaker.
Yes.
at Burnfoot,
mm-hmm.
and he had lost a leg in the First World War. Well, my father had been, during the First World War, he didn't pass for the army, but he went as an orderly. He joined the medical corps, and he went as an orderly in Netley Hospital in Southampton. And he had the greatest respect for anybody who'd been wounded in the war, as had most people. But anyway, Tom had lost a leg, and he had a wooden leg, and he had a motorbike and sidecar. And he was the local sort of shoemaker and plogger and things. And he, during the war, they stopped Tom's petrol. So my father was quite a good scholar and could write a good letter. And so Tom came up to see my father. He'd lost his petrol. Oh, my father says, we'll see about that. And my father never, he always used to say, never bother with the underdog, just go right to the top. So anyway, he wrote to Wilfred Roberts and said that Tom had lost his petrol, and it was an absolute disgrace because he'd given a leg for the, and he couldn't do anything other than what he was doing to make a living, and he couldn't get about because he couldn't walk and he couldn't cycle. And he relied on his motorcycle and sidecar to get them about. So anyway, 3 weeks later, it was reinstated. And he used to often quote that when he was sort of trying to boost Wilfred Roberts' popularity.
Well, I think Wilfred would have cared greatly about someone like that.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
But also, you said about the water.
Yes, so anyway, he was horrified to think that people were still having to carry water. So he did start the campaign, and Wilfred Roberts, I believe, was involved in that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because the then Conservative MP, I think that's what won him his seat, I think. My father once told me that it was the water campaign, because Sir Fergus Graham at Netherby, had been the MP up here, and he his ideas weren't quite as charitable, and he said there was no need for the water because a lot of the farms had their own pump. Well, they did, because people had these rams in, you know, and they could pump the water. There was one at Dirtip, you know, they could pump the water from a spring somewhere into the house.
Yes, but not everyone could do that.
No, really. No, well, the cottages didn't, because they hadn't anything on the land to do it from, you see, and they probably couldn't afford to install it either. I mean, it would be quite a costly thing if people hadn't much money. So anyway, my father got in touch, and I think my father said that was the reason that he was elected, because people, he was the voice of the people.
Well, it makes a big difference if you've got running water. Oh,
well, it makes all the difference, because you need water for everything, don't you?
Yeah.
And I mean, it was a very sort of selfish attitude to take.
Mm.